Stop treating your capital like a casino and start building your warehouse of wealth.
When you put your money in a savings account, a typical savings account, your money is stagnant. It's not in motion. Inflation is just going to eat it alive.
A warehouse protects your inventory. It keeps it safe, it's accessible, and it's there when opportunity knocks.
If all of your money is stuck in prison, like a 401k, you don't have a wealth warehouse. You have a penalty box. Let's fix that. So this is why IBC and dividend-paying whole life insurance is the vehicle to practice it. Just works beautifully.
This is why we build that storehouse first.
So it doesn't matter what the stock market is doing, what the S&P is doing, the Dow, the NASDAQ. It doesn't matter.
There's liquidity without liquidation. That money needs to be somewhere where it's in motion, where it's earning, even while you're using it at the same time. All right. Well, welcome back, everybody. Hey, we are we're doing things a little bit different now. So we've done what, Paul? We've done 203 podcast episodes now over the last 4 years. Right.
So yeah, as of today, 203, this will be whatever, 204 or 205 or whatever. Yeah.
Right. So I think this is would be 204, and we're kind of rebranding. We're starting anew. We got some big changes coming for everybody this year in 2026. So actually, by the way, happy 2026. This being the new podcast, the first podcast of the new year. But we've got we added a producer to the show. His name is David also. So it might get a little confusing, but he's not on screen. He's in the house though. So we're going to be utilizing him, you know, maybe more like Joe Rogan, like, hey, fact check this or pull up this video we want to see or something like that. So what other changes do you see us doing here in the next year, Paul?
Yeah, we talked about doing, you know, recording some episodes with a live audience with people that can join and they can type in questions and I'm going to call him Producer W. Will be there to be able to queue up those questions for us. We can answer questions and give people immediate feedback on the topic of IBC and whatever topic of the day that we're discussing. That's obviously going to be IBC centric, of course, but yeah, it's pretty exciting, a little bit different. So up until now, Dave, we've been over the last half hour, an hour, we've been fooling with our cameras and fooling with our microphones a little bit. We both have the same microphone, same camera, but we're working on setup now. So people, if you're watching on YouTube, you might see the angles of our faces or bodies change a little bit as we kind of refine and change things over time. So we decided to usually only see like our head. Now you can kind of see, you know, my dad bod or whatever. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah, Paul's got a lot of changes lately with Paul's personal life. The new house, the new location, all of that stuff. I know my life is getting a little crazier. We got our oldest moving back into the house in February, awaiting college in the fall. So that'll be interesting. Well, maybe I'll have some more stories, to tell about that. But, yeah, a lot of big things happening this year. So I'm pretty excited. Very excited. So Paul, we're going to talk a little bit today. We kind of want to go back to, you know, what's the name of the podcast? It's Wealth Warehouse, right? And what is, you know, why did we name it Wealth Warehouse? And what does that mean to us?
Well, we named it in honor of Nelson Nash's second book, which is Building Your Warehouse of Wealth. You know, he wrote two books on his own, technically, one Becoming Your Own Banker, and then Dave is holding up Building Your Warehouse of Wealth, which was Nelson's second book, which is around 2009, maybe? 2012? I don't remember the year of it, but
yeah, I'll look it up. We talked about this a lot before. There's certain people who treat their capital like a piggy bank instead of like a banker. And, you know, maybe there's certain people who treat it like they're in a casino. You know, it's like kids. Typically, kids make money. Maybe they do stuff around the house. They get $100 for their birthday. And man, it is burning a hole in their pocket. They can't wait to exchange that money forever for something really dumb, typically candy or a coloring book or Legos. You know, they put the Lego together in 30 seconds and then they're done with it. So, but there's people that do that. What we want to teach people, and we've talked about this in the past, and just going back to that mentality of not having everything locked away, right? So many Americans, and I talked to somebody just recently who, he'd read the book in one night, right? This is great. So he found the podcast. He ordered the book, he read it in one night, and then had a meeting scheduled with me the very next day. And he was asking questions and saying, yeah, I'm just trying to get over this and trying to figure this stuff out. And as he was talking, he was answering his own questions. Like he was saying, you know, I'm 50 years old. All of my money is locked up for another 9.5 years. So, you know, I have to go get financing, or I have to pay cash for a car because I don't have it anywhere else. So it's really interesting when people start reading the book and thinking about this, it truly is changing the way they think. Rethink your thinking, as Nelson says, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember you telling me that story. You know, it's really simple to me. Every dollar that you could pay as premium, right? That will be a dollar that will work for you forever. It will make money for you forever. When you put money in a savings account or a different vehicle, that money does one job, right? And then you go to use that money and you interrupt the growth of that money permanently. And we don't want to do that. So this is why IBC and dividend paying whole life insurance is the vehicle to practice it, just works beautifully.
Yeah. And, you know, here's something we call the merciless math of loss. You know, if you want to call it that. And we've talked about this before. Everybody looks at this average rate of return. Hey, the market gets 10% average rate of return, or, you know, over time, this is what I've averaged, or this is what this fund is averaged. So I'm going to put my money into this fund without ever actually looking at what the actual rate of return is. So, Paul, if you got $100,000 and the market, this is dramatic, but just for the purpose of illustration, the market drops 50%, how much do you have now?
50 grand.
Okay. To get, let's say now the next year, the market gains 50%. How much do you have now?
75,000.
Wow. So you're telling me the market dropped 50%, but in order to get back to where I was, I had to gain 100%. Even though the average rate of return between those 2 years was zero, minus 50 plus 50, but you actually ended 25% down as an actual rate of return. So this is just something that it's surprising how many people have never thought about that. They know how to do math. Everybody knows when I ask these questions to anybody, even my teenage kids, they know the answer, but they've never put that in correlation to, you know, putting money into the market and what that average actually means, which to me is nothing. It doesn't really mean anything at all.
Yeah, exactly right. You want to know your actual return. That's totally different in most people's portfolios than their average return. The average return is gross of fees and volatility, and you want the net return. That's the information you're after.
Right. So the market could be flat on paper, like we said, a 0% return, and you could actually be losing money. Or the market could be going up as average rate of return,
absolutely.
and you could be flat, right? So it's very deceiving.
Yeah. No question. And it's deceiving on purpose, right? And to be honest with you, I never thought of that when I was being advised, and I was, you know, I could see the numbers in the paper of the annual statements or quarterly statements, and I was just like, gosh, they say I'm making this, but I don't see it.
Right. I don't feel it.
This fee and this sales charge and right.
Yeah.
Never felt it.
Exactly. So, and this is why we build that storehouse first. So every dollar that we can put into our own warehouse of wealth, our own capital base, and capitalize ourselves first, then we can put that to use somewhere else. Because what happens every single year, even those years that the market dips, right? Every 4 to 5 years on average, there's a dip in the market or a market crash of some sort. Right? What happens to your cash value in your policies when that happens?
Well, the beauty is whole life insurance is non-market correlated. So it doesn't matter what the stock market is doing, what the S&P is doing, the Dow, the NASDAQ. It doesn't matter. Your cash value is literally going to increase in value every single day of the year.
Yep, every day. That's great. So I would encourage people, you know, we're at the beginning of a new year. This is often the time when people try to reevaluate what they're doing. Maybe look past the last year and say, from where I was last January to this January, how much progress have I made? How much progress did I expect to make, and how much did I actually make? Over time with, compound interest, right? Every year, you should be making more than you made the year before. That's not always the case, unless you have, properly designed whole life insurance policies. Where what I love to do, I started doing this, and maybe this is a tool we'll put together and give out to everybody. Create this to share with you all. But I created my own spreadsheet where I can track my policies, all 15 of them. I know exactly, and I update it every couple months. I don't do it weekly or daily or anything like that. Just every couple months, I'll go in there, create a new tab, and look at where's my cash value. How much more PUA can I pay? How much death benefit do I have now? Because that cash value and death benefit are going up, right? So every year, and it's amazing how the further along I get in my policies, the quicker that growth becomes, the bigger that delta becomes every time I look at it. It kind of blows my mind. Maybe I could do a review, because I started tracking, I think, like last January. And I could do a review from January through December and tell everybody the growth on that. So I'll look into doing that. But that was eye-opening for me, and everybody should be doing the same thing with their finances.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially those, like, you have that, those three policies that you bought a long time ago that which are very mature now. And those are throwing off, $1.50 or maybe even close to $2 of cash value for every dollar in premium that you're paying on them. And the only wish, if you go back in time and make more money, you could make those premiums bigger. That'd be your only wish today, is that those premiums were 100 times larger than they actually are.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, you got to start where you're at, though. So we're not going to tell somebody start bigger than what you can do. Right. And you don't have to put, talk too many people. Yeah. You don't have to talk too many people off the ledge. What we do is kind of, we work to push people a little bit more than maybe they're comfortable with in the beginning, because I don't want you coming back 6 months from now saying, man, I need another policy. Like, great, I'll do that for you. But if you would have done more in the first policy, you'd be even farther ahead right now. Right.
Yeah.
So one of the great things about this being a non-market correlated asset, doesn't matter what the market's doing. Some people like to wait, when the market dips, everybody becomes a pessimist. And unfortunately, a lot of people then sell. They sell low, right, and get out of it. And then they interrupt their compounding, interrupt their growth, which is why really, according to some of the research we did, the average S&P 500 return, say, is 10%. The average mutual fund investor is more like 4 to 5%. Because people are not willing to just weather the storm and let time take care of it. So we're not saying putting money in the stock market is bad. You should be diversified, and you can put money there. If you got a 401k and your employer does a match, great. A lot of you listening are pilots, and your airline funds a 401k for you, whether you put a dollar into it or not. Great. I'm not going to turn that down. But having something that's not correlated to the market, I tell you, the peace of mind, I see the market dropping. I'm like, well, if I have anything in the market, that's a bummer. I just got to ride it out, let it come back. And luckily, I've got capital available that is going up every single day, even if the market's going down, and I have access to it. So I can weather the storm, right? You can weather that bad weather, Paul.
Yeah. And in the industry, we call that sequence of returns risk. You've addressed that, right, by storing the bulk of your capital in a non-stock market correlated asset, so that when the market dips, you don't have to worry about it. If you need money, see what we see though, right, is people need money. Mm-hmm. They forget this is overlooked in the conventional financial planning model. It is overlooked that people need cash. They need capital. They need money to do things right now, not when they're 59 and a half. They've got tuition. They want to build a pool. They want to do this. They want to do that, whatever. They need money to do that. And, shame on them, right? I need to liquidate my mutual funds, or I need to liquidate some of my brokerage account so that I can go build that pool. Well, you just permanently wiped out all of the growth that you spent the last 15, 20 years building in that particular vehicle, right?
Yeah.
If you're using the strategy of IBC, whole life insurance, there is no liquidation. The money never stops growing. And that is the key difference.
You said something there that's great. There's liquidity without liquidation. Where else can you get that? Without jumping through a bunch of hoops, filling out a bunch of paperwork and requesting permission, like the equity in your home, right? With these policies, you've got liquidity without liquidation because you're not actually spending your own money. Your cash value continues to compound, continues to grow uninterrupted if you're using the appropriate company to do so, right? So there's some caveats there. But if you choose the right company, your cash value is not going to, it's not going to take a hit or be interrupted whatsoever when you want liquidity. And liquidity is everything, man. I mean, how many people have you talked to, Paul, who, and maybe this is you listening out there, where, hey, I'm contributing to my retirement plan, my qualified plan every single month religiously, but I'm also going into debt and paying, say, 20% interest or 29% interest on a credit card because I don't have the capital available to go buy what I need to buy or maybe buy what I want to buy. Maybe you're buying stuff you don't need. So does it make sense to be funding a qualified plan that is averaging 10% over, you know, year over year versus and while also carrying debt that's costing you 29%? To me, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It makes no sense.
Right. The math don't math.
Yeah, that dog won't hunt.
That dog won't hunt. Yeah, you can say that now. You're in Tennessee, man. You're a country boy.
Yeah, right?
Do people have access? Do people have a lot of those Tennessee Southern accents out there? Your neighbors?
Yeah, there's a lot of transplants here, but there's a lot of native East Tennesseans, and you can tell. I would say it's a southern accent. There's a difference. I got schooled on this many years ago when I was first introduced to the South. I was in Georgia somewhere and I was like, oh, you have a country accent, ma'am. And she's like, and she was pretty proper. She's like, it's Southern. And yeah. I was like, okay, right. Southern.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, the South is very proud. Very proud. But that's okay.
For sure.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the other things is this whole volume versus rate. So I've got a video on YouTube. And I had a client once, actually it was a friend. He became a client and he's like, you know what? The thing that got me is when you told me how the banks make money. And if you can do that yourself, you took over the banking role. So what banks do right now, maybe you can get a 4% high yield savings account, right? They're willing to pay you 4%. But if you go get a loan, I don't even know what the cheapest loan rates are right now. Maybe they're low single or high single digits. Call it 8%, right? You go to get a personal loan, and it's going to cost you 8%. So the bank is paying you 4% and then loaning your money out at 8%. Most people, you ask them, well, how much is the bank making on that transaction? They're saying, well, they're making 4%. They're making the spread. Well, they're making a spread all right, but it's a heck of a lot more than 4%. Try 100%. So if I had $100 of somebody right. else's money, you give me $100, Paul, and I promise to pay you $4 over the course of a year on that 100. And then I take that 100 and I loan it out to our producer, David, and charge him 8%. He's going to pay me $8 over the year. What was my cost and what did I earn on that? What did it cost me to earn $8?
The cost is just the interest you owe.
Right. So it cost me $4 to make $8. I doubled my money, right? And this is the exact kind of math that we use when we start.
I'll do that all day.
All day. Do I want to double my money? Yes. So it's this exact kind of math that we use when we are the banker in our own life, because I can borrow money, say at 5 or 6%. I'm going to go put it into investment, making 10 to 15%. And I'm making a whole lot more than that spread, right? If I'm borrowing at 5 and I make 10, I just doubled my money in the year.
Yep. And that is how the banks do it, folks. They are taking your money, inflating it 100 or 1,000%, and then they're loaning it back to you and charging interest for it. They're creating money out of nothing and then loaning it back to you and charging interest.
Yep. So you could either put all your money in somebody else's bank, allow them to earn, you know, to double their own money, their cost, you know, what they spend to pay you interest. They can go double that by using your money to loan out to somebody, or you can do it yourself. Capitalize yourself. And that's what, you know, I've been doing for 16 years now. And Paul's been doing since what?
Yep.
For we're 7 or 8 years now. Seven to eight.
Yeah. Well, technically since 2003, just not the right, the right kind.
That's right. So you've had a whole life since 2003. Yep.
I'll say this, this makes me think of what Nelson talks about in the book is people, everybody, doesn't matter. Everyone is fighting a perpetual financial headwind because all the things we just discussed, you're paying interest to someone else's bank, you're interrupting compound growth on your investment accounts or your savings constantly. Every time you take money out of savings to go on vacation, you've just interrupted that money. Incorporating the infinite banking concept into your life is going to add, not right away, but over time is going to add a tremendous financial tailwind, which is going to benefit not only you in this life right now, but the next generation, the generation after that. And we already know, because we've discussed it on many episodes, our children are going to struggle to be homeowners.
Oh, yeah. No
doubt. And luckily, we are putting things in place now, which is going to give them advantage, tremendous advantage over their peers that aren't practicing IBC.
Right. So our children may not struggle to be homeowners, but that generation certainly will. That's a very difficult thing for that generation. I think the average first-time home buyer is something like 40 years old right now. I might need to get that fact checked, David. But
yeah, 38, I think.
Yeah, it's something like that. But you know, bottom line here, when you put your money in banks, banks don't get rich by earning high rates of return. They get rich by keeping money in motion. And having a small cost and a larger payment coming in to them. So what infinite banking does is it teaches you the same thing. That money needs to be somewhere where it's in motion, where it's earning, even while you're using it at the same time. You get both.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, I'll sign you up. All right, everybody. Well, hey, you know, one of the things we're going to do, I don't know if we mentioned this at the beginning, but we want to live stream these. I think you did mention that, Paul. And we will let everybody know. So yeah. Follow us on, you know, all the channels, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. You can follow us and we'll be putting out announcements when we're going to stream live. So we'll do live podcast recordings. You guys can be a part of it. Put your comments in. We'll handle those real time instead of having to send us an email. We love the emails. Keep doing that. But, you know, the real time questions are going to be a lot of fun. Maybe we've got a Q&A episode coming up before too long that, you know, we'll build some momentum and get everybody bringing their good questions in. So a lot of good stuff coming down the road. Yeah. But yeah, good to see you again, Paul, man, in the new year. I need to come out and visit. You tell me when it's warm enough to wear shorts and I'll be out there.
Well, I'll be warm enough in May, but I think you should come down probably like in June or something. Cause we'll be full boating, full pool. Everything will be nice by June.
Yeah, that's right. I want to hit the pool. I want to hit the lake. You have a cold plunge too. Have you used it yet?
I did. I used it about 4 weeks ago. It was like 70 out and I was hot from working out and I went in that sucker and it was legit cold, like 40, 48 or something.
Wait, you haven't used it since?
Yeah. Well, the whole pool is cold, so I don't need to jump in the cold plunge.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Hey, like we said, we want to create more for you this year. We want to bring more value. So we'd love to hear from you to find out what would be of value to you. I know we get a lot of good feedback on the whiteboard videos we do. So if there's something you want whiteboarded or a hurdle you just can't quite get over after reading Nelson's book, let us know. Maybe we can draw it out. I'm a big fan of drawing. I think that's a great way to explain things. That's how we learned in the first place when we were wee little kids, and it still helps. So that or any kind of tools, PDFs, you know, expect some courses throughout the year and maybe even a book in the next year. So, yeah, we got a lot on our plate, Paul. We better get busy.
It's gonna be busy, but also fun. We enjoy it. Just remember, folks, when you're looking at this, you know, come from the. This is going to be a different lens you're looking at IBC through completely. It's a completely different lens. It's not about rates of return. It's not about the numbers. This is about controlling the function of banking in your life, right? Becoming the bank. That's what this is about first and foremost, and learning how to finance the needs of life. So, but yeah, I'm excited, Dave. It's going to be great. And luckily, Dave can draw. I cannot draw to save my life. Literally, I was looking at some plates I made in like 1987. Those plates you draw in at school, and then they create a plate out of it. Awful.
Yeah, only a mother could love. Right. So
yeah, for sure.
Well, you know, I actually got a book, Paul, that shows you how to draw anything using like four basic shapes. So there's my secret.
Yeah.
So I'll let you in on it. But yeah. All right, everybody. Well, hey, hope you enjoyed. Have a great week. We can't wait to talk to you next week. Until then, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.